Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I heard from Brian Grant's publicist prior to the show. Brian Grant has written a book on the trials and tribulations of his career and his life. His publicist reached out to me. You guys know who his publicist is?
I don't.
Take a stab. You know him. He's been on this show.
I have no idea. I'm drawing a blank.
His son, Jaden Grant, reached out to me and the Oregon State defensive back and said, "Hey, my dad's got his book coming out. It's coming out, I think, April 6th. Can he get on the show? He'd love to talk about it." And I'm like, "Yeah, he can get on the show. By the way, how are you doing?" Like, you know, it was interesting to me. It's a family affair. So Brian Grant on Friday's show at 1 o'clock, if those of you want to hear the former Blazer, will do a long, good interview on Friday with Brian Grant. Again, I'm broadcasting today from Indianapolis, where Oregon State will take on Houston. Tonight, it is a 7:15 tip Eastern time, so 4:15 if you're in the state of Oregon. It is at Lucas Oil Stadium, which I literally am looking out the window of the JW Marriott Hotel, where they've been kind enough to let me broadcast from, and I'm looking at the stadium. It's a football stadium. It'll be really strange to see basketball played in there. I did see a Final Four here once before. The basketball court will be raised. It'll be weird to be shooting inside an arena. And I do think some players struggle with it. Some players say it's not a factor. I always think it's weird to be playing basketball inside of a football stadium. And I think it's especially weird when fans are not really allowed in. They're going to about 25% capacity. Why not just hold this event at Bankers Life Fieldhouse? Put it in a basketball venue. I don't want any kind of wild card result to come out of, you know, the game was on a basketball court that was placed on, you know, I get it. If fans were here, they'd have 80,000 people in there and they would print money. But they're not going to do that for this event. And literally four blocks away, you've got an NBA arena. I don't understand why the NCAA didn't back out of playing this game at Lucas Oil Stadium. Perhaps the only reason is maybe they were hoping they could get a full stadium for the Final Four. They were being a little ambitious, but it's just clearer and clearer to me that the NBA is like an aircraft carrier, and I think they have a difficult time turning that thing. A little bit of recruiting news. Davidson grad transfer Kellen Grady, who Oregon had targeted as a graduate transfer target, has now committed to Kentucky. So he's going to Kentucky. He's transferring. So Kellen Grady, who Oregon was really hot after, is now committed or going to end up on campus at Kentucky. Maybe Kentucky will get itself in the NCAA tournament next year and stick around. Who knows? Here comes Ethan Thompson. And I want you to hear this interview. I recorded this interview yesterday, Sunday, with Ethan Thompson. Oregon State guard has been terrific. I thought he played his best game of his season on Saturday. I refer to it in the interview as yesterday, so forgive me. We are taping this interview on Sunday. I think at one point I asked him whether or not they've watched film. He hadn't yet yesterday at the time we taped the interview watched film of Houston, so forgive him. He's not, you know, this is not happening in real time. Full disclosure, the name of the show is The Bald-Faced Truth. I'm not going to try to fool you like some other stations might do, that the interview is live when it's not live. So here's Ethan Thompson from Indianapolis in my interview with him yesterday. In Indianapolis, Ethan Thompson with us, Oregon State guard. You played what I thought was your best game. Did you feel like that was your best game as the game was unfolding, or do you look back at it at the end of the game and go, "Hey, I feel really proud of the effort I put forth"? Or how do you sort of frame that game last night?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely happy with the performance I had, as well as the team.
I don't know if it's the best I've played. You know, I could always do a little bit better. The way I just view the game, never perfect, but that's okay. I think I did play with a lot of good energy, and you know, I was very confident out there.
Now, when you go back and you look at a game, do you think more about what you did right or what you did wrong?
When I look at the game, I go back. I try to look at both to continue what I did well, see if I could have the same opportunities in the next game with the next opponent. And then obviously, you know, you want to correct the mistakes you did wrong, whether it be defensively, offensively, making wrong reads or something like that.
You know, it's interesting. I heard from one of the prep writers at the LA Times during the game as it was going, and there are a lot of people in Southern California that I think are proud of what is happening, you and Jared Lucas in particular, mm-hmm. you guys both being guys from Southern California. But he mentioned yeah. that you had some of your best games against the best of the best. Does mm-hmm. that resonate with you? Like, do you get up when the competition sort of picks up?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, obviously going into every single game, I want to win. But definitely, you know, playing against some talented guys on a big stage gets me going even more. And definitely, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a competitor. My team is full of competitors as well, and all we want to do is win.
What happened December to now? What's your theory on why you guys are playing the way you are now?
I think a lot of it was, you know, everybody getting onto the same page. Like a lot of teams, we didn't have too much time to, you know, really bond with each other due to corona protocols and stuff like that in the spring and summer. But I knew in the back of my head, I knew that, you know, time was going to, you know, play its part and provide chemistry with us. You know, lucky for us, it kind of picked up at the right time. But also, as a team, you know, just changing our mindset into you know, playing winning basketball. I think that's the biggest difference.
Ethan Thompson with us, guard at Oregon State. You know, Coach Tinkle said earlier that he really was on you last year to be more vocal. He thinks you're being more vocal this year. Is that something that comes natural to you, or do you have to kind of remind yourself, hey, I'm a leader now, I need to be more vocal?
I'll say it's a lot more natural now. Early on, you know, I would rather prefer to lead by example, but you know, then a lot of times there's sometimes where you have to communicate leadership as well, and that's something that I've been working on, and you know, I've gotten a lot better at and a lot more comfortable doing. And, you know, at the end of the day, my teammates, you know, respect me and I respect them. And they know that everything I say and everything they say to me is coming out of a place of, you know, trying to get us better as a team. So I've came a long way in that aspect.
It's interesting to watch, like, the police escorts of the buses and you guys getting escorted over to the baseball field and, you know, everybody staying, like, you know, 15 yards away from you guys. And will that ever feel normal to you, or will you look back and go, that was weird no matter what?
It's not normal at all. You know, but, you know, the circumstances we're in, I'm just glad that everybody is, you know, respecting, you know, the boundaries and everybody staying safe. And it won't feel normal at all.
What are practices like? Do you guys, now, as I understand it, are you set up in a ballroom with a basketball court, or what happens there?
Yeah. So we're able to walk over to the convention center. That's literally like across the street. And there's a bunch of rooms in there with basketball courts. And, you know, we get probably like 2 hours in there a day, maybe. And, you know, it's just set up so we could practice. And then when our time is done, we're able to get out. And then lately we've been able to get into the gym at nighttime as well for about an hour to get up shots individually if you wanted it.
Is that nice? Is it a nice thing to do where you can just go and take some shots? And because otherwise you're just sitting in the room, right?
Yeah, definitely. It gives us something to do, you know, if we've been sitting in the room all day. And obviously, you know, we gotta guys on our team are used to getting shots up, you know, in the practice gym or in Gill on our own, and you know, just being in a bubble environment, you don't really have that luxury. But now that it's been made to us, you know, we're taking advantage of it.
You're the son of a coach and a great player and a legend at Crenshaw High School. Your dad, Jared Lucas, your counterpart in the backcourt, is the son of a coach. What advantage is that in, and how is that different than maybe if you didn't have a dad who was so tied to basketball?
I think that it plays a lot in, like, just the decision-making on the court. I feel like it's easy for me to, you know, read defenses and coverages and pick up on, you know, concepts that teams are running, you know, frequently throughout the game. You know, just being able to, you know, exercise my leadership through communication, like how we talked about earlier, throughout the course of the game, and just vocalizing what I see out there. I think that Coach Tinkle, Coach Rupp, my dad, Coach Stewart, everybody has, you know, really trusted me with that, and have been listening to my opinion as well and taking it into, you know, account.
All right, before I cut you loose, you'll get Houston tonight in, you know, at stake, a trip to the Final Four. It's crazy to even say that, but I love that you're in this position. What do you see on film when you watch Houston?
We're about to have our film session later, but I watched their game last night. They're a very talented, athletic group, and they love to get on the offensive rebounds. So, you know, going into games, one of our main focuses is, you know, trying to out-rebound the other opponent and just boxing out, being active on the glass, both offensively and defensively. And that's really all I've seen so far. And then, you know, later tonight, we're going to go more in depth on the film session.
All right. When we talk about, you know, a team catching lightning in a bottle or playing good basketball, there just becomes a point where you look at you guys and it's not a hot team anymore. You're just good.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, do you feel like Coach told you, he said after the game that he's talking to you guys about, this is our time. What does he mean by that?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think, the way I interpret it is that by him saying it's our time to show the rest of the world what we're capable of, what we've known that we're capable of throughout the whole season. But it just comes to putting it together and, you know, playing the whole 40 minutes and then showing everybody that, you know, we could win games.
Ethan Thompson, Oregon State guard, wish you the best. Good luck to you. And thanks for the ride that you're taking our state on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
We're about 2.5 hours away from tip-off here in Indianapolis. That was Ethan Thompson in an interview we recorded yesterday. They've since watched film. It'll be Thompson. It'll be Jared Lucas in the backcourt for Oregon State against Kelvin Sampson's Houston team. Next, though, we're going to turn the focus to the Oregon Ducks and also a peeve of mine. Leave it here. Oregon lost last night. I was at Bankers Life Fieldhouse last night, and, you know, the Ducks, it was evident pretty early, about 5 or 6 minutes into the game, that USC was just too good for Oregon. Oregon didn't have the size. You know, people keep looking at Oregon's inability to shoot the three, and you're not looking, you're seeing the symptom. See, what opposition has done to Oregon down the stretch this season, because Oregon doesn't have a good inside presence. They have no ability to hurt you inside. So all Oregon has is three-point shooting, and if they can shoot the three well, they win. If they can't, they lose. It's pretty simple. But what Oregon State and USC and others have done to Oregon down the stretch is that they have just overplayed the three-point line. And in USC's case, they've got some really long defenders. They've got a bunch of guys that, you know, have the wingspan of a 747. So it was really hard for Chris Duarte and really difficult for Will Richardson to get any kind of rhythm, to get any kind of open shots. And they just could not be effective last night. And people say, well, it was just shooting. It wasn't. It is a byproduct of the inability of Oregon to have an inside presence. Because if Oregon had a post player that could play, it could have hurt Oregon State. Or it could have hurt USC. It could have hurt Oregon State in the Pac-12 championship game. But I thought Oregon State first did it to them in the Pac-12 title game, or Pac-12 playoffs in the tournament in Vegas, by using Roman Silva in the paint and then just letting the other four players really extend on the perimeter. And USC did it, I thought, even more impressively last night in that game. I wrote a column off the game last night in which, you know, it's evident that Oregon has shifted again with Dana Altman. You can kind of see what he's going to do moving forward with his Oregon program. He's got four players that are 6'10" or taller that will be on the roster next season. Now, USC, yeah, the Mobley brothers are going to be gone. But USC will reload. UCLA will be there. Oregon State looks decent or better all of a sudden. And so I think the Pac-12 conference, like, can we all agree the Pac-12 conference has improved its brand? Looks like it's a conference that's going to be very competitive. Like, you know, even Utah, that fired its coach, has made a good hire. I kind of feel like the Pac-12, you know, if Arizona ever wants to get out of the wiretap business and get back to playing college basketball, Pac-12 is going to be really formidable. And amid that, you know, I write this column saying, you know, really complimentary column about Dana Altman and his ability to shift. And what ensued on social media this morning was, it's not a lot of people. It's like a thin stripe of like probably 15 or 20 people who just haven't done the reading but want to debate the column. And I mentioned it earlier in the show, like, if you're going to debate the column, read the column. I don't care if you read it. I don't care if you don't read it. But if you are going to debate it, don't debate the headline. Don't debate what you think I wrote or what I might have wrote or what your psychic abilities tell you I wrote. Just read it, and then let's have a credible conversation about it. Because I got people saying, well, they got four guys coming in. I'm like, yeah, that's in paragraph 8. I got other people saying, well, you're saying Dana Altman needs to shift his recruiting strategy. No, I'm saying he's already done it. When you look at what's happening, and the injury to Nfale Dante, the knee injury to him, certainly took him off the court. But I even think if Dante's on the court last night, I still think Oregon loses that game by double digits. I just don't think it was going to be enough. I think Oregon moving forward is going to look a lot different, though, under Dana Altman. We've seen him do this. He originally came in and he built a program with players that he kept in the program for 3 years, two, three, 4 years. Then he shifted almost to a fault to transfers. I think there was one point where he had like 8, 9, 10, 11 transfers in a 2 year period that came through the program. Okay, it was too transfer happy and he had some problems with it. And then he corrected back a little bit with a blend of players that were transfers, but also some holdovers like Dylan Brooks and Tyler Dorsey, who had at least spent a couple, Jordan Bell, a couple of few years in the program, and all of a sudden they got to a Final Four. Then he shifted again with his philosophy, and he kind of went to a one and done. Hey, Troy Brown Jr. didn't really work out, but he was kind of the first of that era or wave of players, and Lewis King and Bol Bol. And to me, it's insanity. It's insanity when you're taking too many of the one-and-dones. I know it's a lot to resist the temptation, but I just think you're getting into a game there by getting too reliant upon talent that's not going to develop and grow and be in your program. And so now what I think is going to happen here in the next era of Altman basketball, and you can see it, and I wrote it last night, is that he's going to go big. He is going to put big, giant players. I expect to see two or more players on the court at one time who are 6'10" or taller. I think they're going to have a very different feel moving forward. So I write that column saying, look, don't panic. They made it to the Sweet 16. He's going to shift. And what ensued was a line of Duck fans who were upset about their team getting knocked out. There's nothing wrong with getting to the Sweet 16, you spoiled Duck fan. Like, be happy that you're in a Sweet 16, for crying out loud. Do you not remember the leaner years? So, you know, don't get sucked down that rabbit hole. But if you, you know, I don't care if you read or don't read. I don't care if you listen to the show or don't listen to the show. I really don't. Makes no difference. I get paid either way, okay?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.